Good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight for Congressman Mike Capuano's telephone community meeting. My name is Allison, and I'll be moderating tonight's discussion. If you have a question for Congressman Capuano at any point during tonight's conversation, please press star 3. We will also post an audio file of our discussion tonight on our website once it's available. If you'd like to access that file or sign up for Congressman Capuano's electronic newsletter, please visit our website at capuano.house.gov. If you do have a question tonight for Congressman Capuano, please press star 3. And with that, Congressman Capuano would like to make a few opening remarks. Congressman?
Thanks, Allison, and I'm hoping that people are starting to line up to get questions because that's always the more fun part of these conversations. But by way of introduction, this is something that we do pretty often or pretty regularly as best we can in order to hear from as many constituents as we can and also to share as much information as I can with the people that have elected me as what's going on in Washington and why. I'm sure you all follow the news enough to know that things have been particularly difficult in Washington since last January when Donald Trump took office and Republicans took the House and the Senate. They are driving the train. And I think it's always in order for people to have a brief civics lesson relative to how the House of Representatives work. Unlike local community town meetings or city councils or the state legislature or any place in the country, in the United States House of Representatives, in order to get a bill on the floor or an amendment on the floor, you have to be allowed to do that by the majority party. That's why we can't get certain things to the floor to vote on, like reasonable gun control, reasonable immigration reform, any number of things, because the majority party controls the agenda completely, and they won't let it go to the floor because they know that some of their members will vote with us, and they don't want that to happen. For instance, tonight, we just, almost every Democrat, I think maybe everyone, I'm not sure how it ended up, signed what's called a discharge petition. It is the only way to get a bill to the floor of the House, and this particular one has to do with the Dreamer issue, trying to make the lives of these young people a little bit more stable. I'm sure most people who follow this know that prior to last year, President Obama had passed a regulation that basically said anyone who had been brought into the country without documentation when they were young and they were an infant, they'll be able to stay for a little while until we get comprehensive immigration reform done. And then Donald Trump pulled the rug out from under them last year and basically said within, I can't remember the exact date, but a few months, you're going to be here without documentation and subject to deportation on a moment's notice. That threw a lot of kids' lives into turmoil, and for no particular reason, these are young people just trying to do the trying to make their lives better. They didn't choose to come here. They didn't, they don't have any relationship at all with their country where they were born. Some of them don't even speak the language. Anyway, so this is an attempt to get that bill on the floor. We believe if we can get it to the floor, we need 218 signatures. We don't have that yet. We did get, I think it's 20 Republicans. We need 5 more. If we get that to the floor of the House, then we'll be able to vote on it. But that's what the kind of thing that's going on down here. And with that, I'm in the impression, I'm hoping that we have some callers lined up, and I'd rather go to questions rather than just do a one-sided lecture. So if we have anybody, I'd love to hear the questions.
You have some callers waiting to ask questions, and if you would like to ask Congressman Capuano a question tonight, please press star 3. Our first caller is Patty from the South End, who would like to talk about traffic. Patty, your question for the congressman?
Yes, my question has to do with the congestion, the traffic congestion. It seems, it is getting so much worse. I'm out in it every day within the city, in all sections of the city, and it's the gridlocks, just the amount of traffic. And it's not just me. It's a general, you hear it everywhere, the conversations. And I can only envision it getting worse with all of the development that is going on, which is great for the city. What do you foresee in the big picture of resolving this issue going forward?
Thanks, Patty. In Boston, more roads are not going to be able to answer our problems because there's no place to put them. We have to find other methods of transportation. I've been focusing on the things that are available now, mostly fixed rails, subways, commuter lines, things like that. On occasion, we do have a few routes that have dedicated bus lanes. The Silver Line has that. There's a new one in Everett that's being tried. They seem to work in certain places, but you have to have the road that's wide enough. You have to have a community that's willing to give up parking on one side of the street so that you can get those dedicated bus lanes during rush hour. There are ways to do it. There are also more innovative ways that are being looked at by people who are smarter than I am. I'm sure you've read about the things on the seaport on these individual pods and the tramway. And I don't know if those are going to work, but I know they're being studied. And I think that we have to consider making these investments. Right now, we put the Fairmont line in a few years ago. It's not where we want it to be, but it does add a transportation alternative. If we can get it where we want it to be, it'll be more like a subway line, and it'll be a lot better for the people in that neighborhood. We've added infill stations to some of the commuter rail lines, particularly in Alston-Brighton was one, and we're extending the Green Line over to Somerville. I think that that's the way to go. We're also trying to add more bike routes. A lot more people are biking back and forth to work now, and we're trying to add more bike routes to get those people into a safer position off our main street, so it's safer for them, safer for cars, and to try to provide special dedicated lanes for them when we can. So there's a lot of things happening. In an older city like Boston, some of our options are limited, and they're limited because the streets are not that wide. And because you're just not going to knock down a whole lot of buildings to do it. That's why I think mass transit is the only way for us to go if we're going to really solve these problems. We need to get more people out of their automobiles and into mass transit, but in order to do that, we have to improve the mass transit system. So, number one, it's more frequent. Number one, it's more reliable and then more frequent. I think we can do that. It does take an investment. It does take money. I think the average person is willing to pay for that.
If you're just joining us tonight and you would like to ask Congressman Capuano a question, please press *3. Rita is joining us now, and she has a question about sanctuary cities. Rita, your question for the congressman?
I was just wondering why Boston is a sanctuary city. And just now when you're talking about the traffic, if they stop building so many condominiums, there won't be as many cars. I noticed the same thing with traffic in Boston. It's been horrendous the past 3 months.
Yeah,
building too many condos, and there's another 300 or 400 cars on the road.
Well, the good part is that we live in an area that people want to live in, so that more people are moving in. The bad part is, of course, it does increase congestion, and it also drives house prices up. But that's in a free market, it's going to be awfully difficult to stop expansion in a real sense of the word, because a lot of those condos are being built where there used to be factories, and it's not like they're knocking down them. Some people are, but not many of them are knocking down 2 and 3 family homes to do it. As far as sanctuary city goes, almost every city that I represent, I believe, is a sanctuary city of one way or another. And what that does, I can speak to Somerville because I was on the Board of Aldermen when they passed. I actually drafted the ordinance we had, but they're almost all the same. Boston doesn't have an ordinance; it has a policy. What that's about is it doesn't mean any criminals get let go. That is not the way it works. That's a fiction created by the Trump administration to scare people. What it is, it's an opportunity to have an immigrant community, whether we like it or not, we have it, and the people in the immigrant community are oftentimes victims of crimes. In some of them, when I drafted ours, it really revolved mostly along domestic violence lines. People from other countries have different standards of morality and different standards of activity relative to a husband and a wife. And some countries, they don't frown on domestic violence the way America does. And we had women that were literally having their lives threatened in a very physical way, getting beaten to an inch of their life. And they wouldn't talk to police because they were afraid that things would get out of hand. And the idea was to create a situation where people are not afraid to talk to the police about crimes that shouldn't exist. Now, let me be very clear. In any of the sanctuary cities, if somebody commits a crime, like robs a bank or steals a car or the typical crimes we know of, they are not protected in any capacity, not at all. However, if somebody gets stopped for running a red light or somebody gets stopped for jaywalking, that's not the kind of thing that they're going to be in jeopardy for. And it's really about creating a sense of trust between the police department and the immigrant community so that people can feel protected, so that the police will get cooperation, so that people will actually show up in the courtroom to testify against a gang member who's terrorizing their own neighborhood. And those things have worked. I want to be real clear. Donald Trump and his friends try to present it as if we're protecting criminals. That has never been the case in Massachusetts. I can't speak for other states. And it's not the case in Boston or Somerville or Cambridge or Chelsea. It's more about trying to keep the crime rate low more than anything else. And it has worked on a pretty good basis. It only became a controversy when Donald Trump became president.
If you're just joining us tonight and you would like to ask Congressman Capuano a question, please press *3. Debbie from Somerville is joining us now with a question about homelessness. Debbie, your question?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm just appalled. I mean, I see so many people on the streets, veterans especially, and they're living in alleyways and in doorways, and there's so many empty buildings that are out there. They're not doing nothing with them. Why can't they make homeless shelters for the veterans and the families that are living on the streets? Especially in the wintertime, you see families with children living in a box or living in a car. What are they doing with these empty buildings? Absolutely nothing. They should be taking care of the American, the vets.
I agree with you, but I think it's a national tragedy that the richest country in the history of mankind has homeless veterans. It should be an embarrassment to every American. And honestly, most people, not all, but most of the people that are currently homeless on the streets, yes, they have maybe some drug issues, maybe some mental health issues. Some of them, they have no fault of their own, just bad economic times. But there are lots of programs for people to get into it, but they have to ask for the help. In Massachusetts, we have a lot of programs that help most people. We can provide housing for people who want it. However, the law is very clear. You cannot force someone to come in and get shelter. That's number one. Number two, let me talk to the federal side. In the Commonwealth and in the local areas, all the ones I represent, they're all very good at trying to take care of their own people, including homeless people. On the federal side, we keep cutting funds for these types of things. Because I agree with you. If, for instance, any of these vacant buildings, you can't just take somebody's property. You have to pay for it. So the government would have to come in, or somebody or some agency would have to come in and pay for the property, and then they'd have to pay to rehab it into a livable place. And then most of these situations, or not most, all of these situations, they have to be staffed by somebody 24 hours a day in order to help the people that we're talking about. So I agree with you. It is something that I think we need to do more of in America. In Washington, honestly, the priorities are different. They have been cutting these programs, and they have not been funding them. And again, I really, it's amazing to me that people who bump themselves on the chest the most about being a pro-veteran, a friend of the veterans, turn their back on this particular issue because it's difficult. And again, many of these veterans that are on the streets, they have other problems that need to be addressed. You have to give them housing. But then you're going to have to deal with other issues as well, which I am more than happy to do. I think that's the right thing to do by society, and I think especially for those people who've done their service.
Just joining us tonight, and you have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press *3. Richard from Dorchester is joining us with a question about affordable housing. Richard, your question?
Thanks for the opportunity. The federal government cut housing under President Trump about $3 billion, and I'm wondering, with the cost of housing, both rental and market rate housing, rising consistently in the greater Boston area, is there anything being done substantively to be able to either slow that process or subsidize that process, with the HUD budget being cut? And how are the folks that are voting on cutting these budgets, I mean, we send the text messages and emails, apparently they're not responding to any of that because I know they're going in large numbers. How can we reconcile that?
Richard, you're 1,000% right. A lot of the HUD budget has been cut dramatically, both Section 8 housing and in public housing. Both of them have been cut over the last 15 to 20 years, and it's getting worse. This is something. Every year the appropriations come out, every year, for instance, President Trump, he tried to slash it. His budget proposal was an absolute across-the-board 20 or 30% cut on all these programs. We were able to stop that, but we can't get, we haven't been able to get enough people to vote to get money back into the programs. Public housing has suffered because of it, and Section 8 certificates are limited. We're having trouble saving the housing that we do have because a lot of that is called, it's called an expiring use. It's owned by private property with an agreement by the federal government. If we don't extend our agreement with the owners, they're going to just go to market rate because a lot of these places were built in now desirable neighborhoods. And that's happened left and right. Not all have done that, but many have. The only way to stop this, Richard, is to get more investment and better policies from the federal side. The state and local governments don't have the money to do this. They want to do it, but the federal government has to step up. And I want to tell you that affordable housing is something I've been working on all my life. Before I was in elective office, I started my community activism by being a member of the board of my local community development corporation. And their whole mission was to create and maintain affordable housing, because even then, the numbers were a lot lower than they are today, but even then the pressure was very difficult for people working. That's one of the reasons we're trying to raise the minimum wage. And let me be clear, making $15 an hour in Boston is not going to bring you to home ownership. But it is a step up in the ladder, and it's a good step in the right direction. And again, most of it has to do with housing. If we can get people into stable, safe, and affordable housing, they can start building their way into the middle class on their own. And I happen to think that's exactly the kinds of things that the American society should be doing.
Christine from Randolph is joining us with a question about Social Security. Christine, your question for the congressman?
Yes, thank you very much, Representative Capuano, and thank you for your service. My question's a little personal. I've enjoyed listening to all the other questions. I'm a retired teacher, and I am not able to access my husband's Social Security should he pass away before me, as most other wives would be able to, even though I've paid into Social Security in addition to having taught. And I think we got caught as retired teachers under this windfall pension elimination, which I think was intended for people who have these ridiculously high pensions. I am a teacher, very happy to have been a teacher for many years, but I certainly don't have a gigantic pension. It really is unfair. It will make a huge difference. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but for me, trying to support myself without the income of my husband's Social Security, which we have been relying on in our retirement as well. And I was wondering what steps can be taken to maybe tweak that bill a little bit so that it doesn't unfairly impact little average working people.
This is a big issue, Christine. It's been a big issue now for at least 20, 25 years. I don't know why it was instituted. It happened before I was in Congress. It's called the WEP, the Windfall Elimination, the P stands for. And the other part of it is called the GPO, the Government Pension Offset. It is targeted at people who have worked several different jobs, some of which would be subject to Social Security and some of which would not be, such as a teacher, because state and local employees in Massachusetts and several other states are exempt from Social Security because they have their own separate pension system. I am one of them. So when it comes my time to retire, I will be hit with the same penalties you're talking about. And it is totally unfair because if you had a 401k and an IRA and Social Security, you're able to take all of them at full benefit. Whatever it is you're entitled to, you're entitled to. This is the only situation where you get punished. We were close to resolving it last year, and it fell apart based on some issues that were not dealt with. I believe firmly that if Democrats take the House in this November, that come early next year, we'll be able to deal with this problem. I don't know that we'll be able to deal with it 100%, but we'll be able to deal with a big chunk of it. There are a lot of people in your situation, Christine. As I said, I will be one of them when I retire. And it's not just Massachusetts. I think I can't remember the numbers of states. I think 7 to 10 states. We've been working very closely with the retired state, county, and municipal employee association. And they're on top of this. They're working very closely with us. And if we can take the House back, I think there's a very good chance that we can fix a lot of this particular unfair problem.
If you're just joining us tonight and you have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press *3. Stephen from Alston is joining us with a question about Afghanistan. Stephen, your question for the congressman?
Hi.
Hey,
why are we still there, and how are we going to get out, and what's victory?
Stephen, I've been asking that question for years now. I haven't got a clue why we're still there. I think we should have been gone years ago. And I want to be clear, I voted to send troops to Afghanistan, but not to rebuild Afghanistan. I voted to send them there to kill or capture Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and that mission has been accomplished. Now, there's still some Al-Qaeda around, but they're not in Afghanistan. They ran away, and they went to other parts of the world, and we should be chasing them. I couldn't agree with you more. The mission changed. George Bush changed the mission. First, he went into Iraq, and he distracted America doing that, and then extended the Afghanistan mission. And I'll be honest, President Obama did the same thing. I disagree with him. And now President Trump is doing the exact same thing. It is not what we're supposed to be doing. It is not what America is. We are not a colonial power. I don't want to become a colonial power. Afghanistan, I think the minute we leave, we'll probably revert right back to what it was. I know that. But if the alternative is to stay there forever, I just don't see that as a viable alternative, both militarily and financially. It's costing us billions upon billions of dollars every year to do this with not much to show for it. So, I mean, Stephen, you've asked excellent questions. I don't have a good answer for you because I agree with you. I think we should be out of there. We should have been out of there years ago.
Ray from Randolph is joining us with a question about President Trump. Ray, your question for the congressman?
Yes. Representative Capuano, should charges arise against number 45? Do you have what it takes to impeach the president?
Certainly do. Yes, I mean, I don't take any joy in it, and I'm not going to draw a conclusion yet. I mean, everybody's entitled to a fair hearing. Congress is not doing its job right now. Right now, all of our chits are resting with the Mueller investigation. Congress has pretty much shut down its own investigation. I will tell you that if the Democrats take the House back, we will reinstitute some of these investigations. But again, I don't want to draw a conclusion. I think that would be unfair. I wouldn't want anybody doing it to me. I'm not going to do it with President Trump. But certainly there's a lot of questions. My biggest concerns revolve around the conflicts of interest that we read about. That's more important to me than some of the other allegations that are out there. And if those allegations are proven out and sufficiently proven out, I would vote to impeach in a heartbeat because I think it America deserves better. But again, I'm not going to sit here today and tell you he deserves to be impeached yet, simply because first of all, we need to do the full investigation. And I am all in favor of that. And if the investigation bears out what we suspect and the types of things that have been reported, certainly I think there's plenty of impeachable offenses there.
If you're just joining us tonight and you have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press *3. James from Brighton is joining us with a question about transportation and bike lanes. James, your question?
Hi, Representative Capuano. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I know that, it's great to be environmentally friendly and safe, and biking is a great way to do that, especially around this congested city, as you mentioned before. My issue is this. There's no accountability for bikers on the road. There's no registry for bikers on the road. There's no, the little license plates you can put on the back of bikes if they do something illegal. How do we track them? I know cars have a greater responsibility, obviously. They can injure much easier than a bike can. But a lot of bikers do disobey rules of the road that they are supposed to obey as well. And I don't know how we track this at this point without some kind of a registry system.
Well, James, that would be an issue for the state of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I remember when I was a kid, I had to get a bike license. It was a little license that dangled off the back of the seat, just like an automobile license. They don't seem to do that anymore anyplace. But with more commuters coming up, with more incidents between cars and bikes, I think that the kind of issue you're talking about is a legitimate issue. Most bikers are doing the right thing. I commute back and forth to Boston every single day when I'm home and around the city a lot because I'm going from one meeting to another. And I would say most bikers are perfectly fine. It's like everything else, it's a handful of people who are not just disobeying traffic laws but also causing real difficulties on the street and also giving good bikers a bad name. So I don't have any problem with that's what the state wants to do, but that's a state issue. The federal government will not be involved in that, and nor would I want the federal government involved with something like that.
We have a question tonight for Congressman Capuano. Please press star 3. Rosie from Roxbury is joining us with a question about gun violence. Rosie, your question? Hello?
Hello, Rosie?
I think we might have lost Rosie.
Okay.
Go on to our next question. Blanca from Chelsea is joining us with a question about the opioid crisis. Blanca, your question for the congressman?
Hello?
Blanca, are you with us? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Blanca, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk to the taxpayers. So my question is, I'm very concerned about the opioid crisis and drugs and alcohol. And around the area where I live, especially in the main areas of, like, the Riviera Beach Parkway, I constantly see these poor young kids begging for money. And basically that money will go directly to drugs or alcohol, nothing else. And people are dying constantly. You could see them throwing themselves on the street because they cannot even get up because they're so sick. I just want to know, as I hear all the time, they promise that they're going to do something about it really quick. Everything is taken care of, and nothing is really taken care of. These poor people are dying, and yet our children are seeing this every day because they go to school. They see these people falling apart. What I want to ask you, what is that you're doing, or what can you do on this crisis that are taking away our children and our families?
I appreciate the question, Blanca. You're 100% right. It's a real problem across the country. It's not just in Massachusetts. The federal government the main thing the federal government can and should be doing on this is providing funds to the local governments and to the local agencies, the nonprofits that deal with this. I mean, first of all, when it comes to drugs or alcohol, people need to ask for help first. You cannot force someone to clean themselves up. So that's a minor problem. But even today, if they ask for help, it's very difficult to get it for them because there's so many limited options. Federal government has just come up with some money to do it. We did take a step in the right direction on this issue. And it is a beginning, but it is going to take some time for that money to get through the system and get out to the street to actually do something about this. And my fear is, like everything else, we talk a good game, and it takes so long to actually get something done that by the time it actually gets to the people that need the help, we're on to the next crisis. In this particular one, everybody seems – they talk on the same page. And again, this is Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals. We all talk about the issue, and we all seem committed to it. But again, when it comes to putting money on the table, which is really all that the federal government can do, we have a lot of people who hesitate. We have done it. There is money going out as we speak to some of these agencies. I'm not so sure it's going to be enough. So there are those of us who are fighting to, number one, make sure that we can continue this funding. It's not just one time and done. And number two is to try to boost it up to a level that will really make a difference.
Terry from Brighton is joining us now with a question about health insurance. Terry, your question for Congressman Capuano?
Hello. Yes, hi Congressman. I'm calling about just the health insurance. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, and initially they renewed me for only a $17 increase, and I was shocked. And then I get this letter that says, you've been put into Blue Cross Select, and all your providers might not be in the group, the newest group. And I call them, my cancer doctor isn't in the group, my kidney doctor's not in the group, and if I want to go to HMO Blue now, it's $810 a month. That includes I have a $3,000 deductible, I spend $150 a month on copays, doctor's visits are $60, specialist visits are $75, I mean, And then I see commercials for Humira, which is a medicine on, which I know I could get cheaper in Canada. And it's made in America. I mean, and I don't understand why one group of politicians gets such joy in denying Americans affordable health care. And that's my question, or my statement.
I can't answer the last part, Terry. I do think that you're right. The big battle down here, when everything is said and done, is whether we are members of a bigger society where we all owe each other something. such as affordable health care, such as affordable and safe housing, such as the opportunity for an education, and on and on and on, or whether you're just on your own. And if you can't get any of those things, too bad. I fall in the one in the category where I think I'm part of a greater society, and I think everybody should have a right to affordable health care. But we're the minority at the moment. That's why they've been trying to rip down the ACA, and they're trying to undermine Medicare and Medicaid at every turn. On your specific issue, I would suggest you give my office a call tomorrow. I can't answer the specific questions about what's going on with your situation. And we can at least find out. I don't know. I'm not going to make any promises of what we can do to help until we find out the details of the problem. But in general, the battle down here to save healthcare, the healthcare progress that we've made is constant. And I want to be real clear. I do not think that the ACA, the Obamacare, was the end of the debate. It was a step in the right direction. 20 million more people got coverage than we had it before. And that's a good thing. We still have problems with both the ACA and the healthcare in general. So I would love to get back to that debate. And healthcare, let me also be clear, healthcare is a difficult, complicated, emotional subject no matter what you do. Even if you had all people on the table of goodwill who wanted to do the right thing, it's going to take some time and trouble and difficulties to actually figure out how to do it. But that's a worthwhile debate. That's a worthwhile endeavor. And for me, I would love to get back to that. That's what we did with the ACA. Again, I can criticize the law like as much as anybody, but it did provide affordable coverage to a lot of people, and that was a step in the right direction. So, Terry, if you want, feel free to call my office tomorrow about your specific issues, and we can look into it if you want us to.
Just joining us, and you have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press *3. Anna from Roxbury is joining us with a question about gun violence. Anna, your question for the congressman?
Hi, hello, Mr. Congress. I'm calling because my concern right now is the gun violence that we have right now in Roxbury. Like, when is this going to stop? We need a mediation for the gun violence to stop in Roxbury. Thank you.
Welcome. Gun violence is a plague across the country, and in Boston, it's actually better than it is in many places in the country because we have reasonable, significant gun control laws. I think the governor signed it. They actually just tightened it up just a little bit more a few weeks ago. But at the national level, we cannot get one item on gun control on the table, even closing things like background checks or even doing something like ensuring that people would have certified mental health problems. Don't have a license to carry a gun. The NRA has Congress locked up. Not all members of Congress, but has the majority of Congress locked up. And I will tell you that until that changes, we're going to have trouble really making an impact on gun violence. Again, Massachusetts is doing what it can. Boston is doing what it can. I think they're doing a pretty reasonably good job. Congress and Washington, D.C. is not doing a great job because of the NRA and their influence here. I will tell you that all I can tell you is I am proud. The only F in my whole life I ever got that I'm proud of is my F rating from the NRA because I voted for every gun control measure that I've had an opportunity to vote for in Congress. I'm not looking to take weapons away from the hands of legal people that have fulfilled all the laws, but I do think it's a fair thing to ask for a background check for everybody who owns a gun. I do think it's a fair thing to say that assault weapons have no place on our streets and other things like that. So I wish I had a better answer for you, Anna, but I know it's not what you want to hear, but we do live in one of the safest places in the country. America as a whole has the problem because there's too much of a love affair with weapons, and we're part of the country, and so therefore there's only so much the state can do. They're doing a good job. And they're going to continue to do it, but gun violence will not be under control until the federal government takes some action.
Michael from East Cambridge is joining us with a question about the Trump tax cuts. Your question for the congressman?
Yes. Thank you, Congressman. Concerning the tax cuts that so many Republicans have rejoiced as far as like giving families money in their bank accounts. To me, it seemed very 2%, and a lot of corporate tax breaks. And I know you're up against it in Congress, and I would just like to hear your opinion.
The tax bill that was passed last year is a horrendous bill. You're 100% right. Something like 80% of the benefit goes to 2% of the people, or something like that. And that's nuts. That is just dividing this country further along socioeconomic lines, making it the divide between the rich and the poor horrendous. So the rich and the middle class. Look, no one likes to pay taxes, and if you're going to have tax cuts, if they were targeted to the poor and the middle class, that'd be probably okay. Why? Because if you give me an extra $200, if I give you $200 in a tax cut, you are going to spend it. You're going to move that around in the economy, and that might do some good for the economy. Now, granted, if we do that, then I have to go back to the transportation and the housing and the healthcare issues we talked about earlier. That's less money for those things to happen. So people have to understand, if you want programs, if you want better transportation, and you want better healthcare, and you want more affordable housing, somebody has to pay for that. But again, we can argue all day long about who should do it. There's no way you can argue that people who are the wealthiest people in the world shouldn't pay a little bit more in taxes. I am not the guy who bashes millionaires and billionaires. There is nothing wrong with being rich, and there's nothing wrong with earning that money. However, if you have that kind of income, if you have that kind of disposable income, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to change your lifestyle to pay more taxes as long as we're not killing you. We're not talking about a 90% rate. We're talking 30%. And you know, if you have $1 million and you're left after taxes with $700,000, you can't look me in the eye and honestly tell me that you can't make ends meet. So, again, I think that the bill that we passed last year was completely targeted the wrong way. I would love to find a way to repeal most of it. And to target those revenues into some of the programs we talked about, transportation and housing and healthcare. Again, that's what builds a great society, and I actually enjoy living in a great society, and I don't want to go to the type of society where we're all just on our own and too bad if you haven't got enough money for a house.
Kate from Boston is joining us with a question about affordable housing. Kate, your question for the congressman?
Kate, I'm having a hard time hearing you. Can you speak into the phone?
Kate? I'm sorry, Kate. We're having a hard time hearing you.
Somebody else? I think we have to move on.
So, Selena is joining us from Roxbury with a question related to the post office. Selena, your question for the congressman?
Hold on for a minute. Yes. Hi, congressman. I'd like to know what the status is on the post office timesheet investigation that was going on, and, you know, with the managers and the supervisors subtracting time from the employees' timesheets.
Yeah, I haven't been up on this one in a couple of months, Selena. It's a good question. Now that you've asked that, I'll chase that down tomorrow. You obviously know the issue. There was an allegation that some of the managers were not treating their employees well. They were basically stealing money from their employees by changing the timesheets around. That was being investigated by the Inspector General. I'm a few months off of this investigation, though, because I usually get these things going, then I wait until they come up with a report. I just don't remember. So if you want to give the office a call tomorrow, Selena, I'm sure we can find an answer, and I apologize for not having it at the top of my head.
Mari is joining us now with a question about high cost of living in Boston. Your question for the congressman?
Yes, hello, congressman.
Hi.
I live in the city of Boston, and honestly, it's I love it. I was born here. I was raised here. But it's just too expensive to live in the city. And honestly, for me to say I'm going to live on my own, let alone a family, I have to move away from the city, and I don't want to do that. You know, and I know there's things that the city, the state can do, but I'm wondering what, if anything, the federal government can do to help. It's just the rent is too expensive to live here.
Right. Well, you're 100% right. That's, I think, this is one of Greater Boston's biggest problems, is the cost of living is just through the roof. I mean, housing costs too much, transportation costs too much, and, you know, and well, obviously wages are actually higher than the rest of the country, but they're not high enough to meet these needs. The federal government could do a lot. We could have a different tax policy that I think would go a long way towards doing this. We could provide more affordable housing subsidies to people. We could do a lot, but thus far, the current federal government, the people that run it, President Trump and his party, they oppose all those programs. They believe that you're on your own, and if you can't make it, then too bad, then you should move. I don't agree with that. I think that it's important to live in an area, and Greater Boston really has to be the whole gamut of socioeconomic background. I don't mind having some wealthy people in the neighborhood. I think that's fine. But I don't want just wealthy and just poor. I think it's really important for the vibrancy of any community to have a little bit of it. We need a lot of middle class people. We need kids. We need seniors. And it's, to me, the beauty of Greater Boston is the diversity that we have on all kinds of levels. And I don't want to lose it because people are being priced out of their own neighborhoods. It is a difficult situation. And again, this really goes right back to everything else. This goes back to elections. Elections matter. When people like, you know, Donald Trump get elected, the kinds of issues that I've been hearing tonight get put to the back burner. They're kind of simple. They have a different view of what life should be than most of us do. And that's why I encourage everybody to vote, and everybody to vote in their own personal interests.
If you're just joining us tonight and you have a question for Congressman Capuano, please press *3. Shay from East Boston is joining us with a question about special education. Your question for the Congressman?
Good evening, Congressman Capuano.
How are you?
Thanks for taking this time tonight. As a graduate of the Boston Public Schools and my wife being an educator in that same system and I a counselor, where do you see the future of the public school system, especially versus the charter schools, and as it relates to special education and resources?
Well, that's a really good question. It depends how we do it. If they completely take the cap off of charter schools, then what will happen over time is the charter schools will become the place where so-called regular ed kids end up going, and public schools will become simply the repository of special needs kids, maybe some VOC kids, and maybe some bilingual kids. I don't think that's a good idea. I've always thought that the school system should accept every child that walks through the door with the way they present. And that includes if they have a special need, we should deal with it. If you don't speak English, we should deal with it. If you have some behavioral problems, we should deal with it. It doesn't make it easy. It makes it really tough. But the kind of education system that says we're only dealing with the well-behaved child who has no problems, who doesn't have a language problem, and doesn't have any special needs, that's an exclusive system that would have thrown out a lot of the people that I grew up with. And so for me, that is an unacceptable answer. The whole idea, the beauty of public education is that every child is supposed to be treated the same as much as we can. I'm not saying we actually do it, but that's the goal. That's what we've been trying to do. That's what the whole special education is all about. It came into being because a lot of kids with special needs were just being shunted aside. They were being pretty much allowed to drop out every day of the week. They were being just put in a corner and not taught because it is difficult and it is expensive. All that being said, I don't know where it's going to go, but I do fear the long-term consequences of people turning their back on some children that might need a little extra help, and special needs is one of them.
Frank from Randolph is joining us now with a question about assault weapons. Frank, your question for the Congressman?
Yes, I think you might have partially answered my question from a previous caller, but could you give me your exact position on assault weapons?
Sure. If I could, I would ban them. I don't think they're needed on the streets at all. If they, you know, you want to come up with a way where a handful of people could own them in certain circumstances, I guess I'd listen to that as an alternative, you know, some sportsmen at a sports club. But there is just no need for a hunter to have an assault weapon on the street, particularly when you take an assault weapon, you add a bump stock to it and a 100 bullet clip. That is meant for only one purpose, and that's for killing human beings. There's no other need for a weapon like that. So if I had my druthers, that's what would happen. I I don't have my druthers. We are the minority at the moment. That's the minority view. So I don't think much is going to change. I think assault weapons are going to continue to be allowed. Right now, I'm not even sure about bump stocks. I mean, even President Trump said that he would be willing to ban them, but he hasn't done it yet. So therefore, that's my position. Hopefully he'll agree with it. If not, I apologize, but that's pretty firm on this one.
Raymond from Somerville is joining us now with a question about North Korea. Raymond, your question for Congressman Capuano?
Hi, Mike. How you doing? You know, on June 12th, there's going to be a summit between Kim Jong-un and President Trump. But that might be canceled. Now President Trump is offering Kim Jong-un, the dictator of North Korea, protection. He said he guarantees him he'll be a rich man, his country will be rich. Does he have to go through Congress to do that? And will he do anything to make the history books on doing this?
I don't know. It depends what he wants to do, whether he has to come through Congress. I mean, the president is charged with international relations. That is within the bailiwick of the president. However, to make a deal with another country, depends how they do it. More often than not, they would have to come through Congress. So it depends how and what. Look, North Korea is a problem. It's been a problem for a long time. I'm hoping, I'm praying that some of the talk we've heard actually comes to fruition. It would be great to get nuclear weapons off the peninsula of Korea, which is one of the most difficult situations in the world today. For now, we're in the middle of it at the moment. I have a hard time understanding how calling each other names makes the situation better, but I'm willing to sit here and say, look, you know, if we can get them to the table and we can make a deal, let's see what we can do about it. It's an important thing to do. I think North Korea is a very dangerous player, I think anything we can do to get nuclear weapons off the table is worth considering, which is why I was such a strong proponent and supporter of the Iran nuclear deal. Not because Iran's a good country. It has their leaders are really problematic in a thousand different ways. But the agreement we reached did get them off of nuclear weapons, which at least buys us some time to try to bring them back into the world of legitimate nations. Anyway, all that being said, I don't know what the president has in mind. I stopped trying to read this president's mind a long time ago. And if he comes to Congress with something like anything else, I'll try to be open-minded on it. And if it makes the world a safer place, I'll be supportive.
Lang from Roxbury is joining us with a question about hate crimes. Your question for the congressman?
Yes. Hi, Congressman. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to have this call. I think this is super awesome. So as we all know, we're seeing, on the news, I feel like on a monthly basis, that there's been an uptick in hate crime and police brutality. And just wanted to know personally what you're doing, your viewpoint, and then what can we do individually in our community to fight hate crime and police brutality?
Well, on hate crimes, the best thing you can do is actually just stand up and be heard. When it happens, good people have to stand up. Look, bad things happen, and there are bad people in the world that are going to do terrible things. Remaining silent is the worst option you can. So that if you see a hate crime, even if you think that others may not recognize it as such, I think it's important to speak up to the best of your ability. And I think that's particularly important with political leaders when there's something that is done on the basis of race or gender or sexual identity or whatever it might be. That's abhorrent to most good Americans as far as I'm concerned. As far as police brutality goes, I think that issue is being worked on every day. I think that, again, the recent cases in Boston seem to have been handled pretty well, at least the ones that I'm familiar with, in the sense that people take a real serious interest in it and take a real legitimate review of allegations. And when police brutality happens, people need to be held accountable. At the same time, I think that people have to – it's a matter of trust in the sense that do you trust the police department and do you trust the political leaders of the city to conduct a legitimate review of an allegation? And thus far, I got to say I do. It's based on what they have done. And it doesn't mean that, you know, there's not going to be problems. It just means when they occur, they will be dealt with appropriately. And it seems that way. And on a national level, I think the biggest problems we've had is that there are some people who just want to brush it under the rug and say, you know, the police can never be wrong. All police are perfect. Well, that's just not the case about any group. I'm a Roman Catholic, and, you know, guess what? There were some bad priests. It doesn't make all priests bad. It just means there were some bad ones, and they needed to be dealt with. Just like the police, there are bad politicians, there are bad everybody. And, you know, the people in any group that step out of line need to be addressed appropriately. And the same thing goes with police. Most police officers are good people. Most police officers try to do the right thing. And most police officers understand that when they're serving next to someone who's not, they are better off with that person being handled in a different way. So, I think, number one, speak up and stand up and speak up about hate crimes. And number two, on police brutality, make sure that the best of our ability, we can maintain that trust between the city leaders and the community. And I think we're doing okay. It can always get better, but it's a matter of communication and a matter of working together to make sure that the goals we want get reached.
We have time for just a couple more questions this evening, and we do apologize if we were not able to get to yours. You will have an opportunity at the end of this conversation to leave a voicemail for Congressman Capuano, and we will also post an audio file of the meeting on our website if you missed a portion of the meeting and you would like to listen in. We have a call from James from Brighton, who would like to talk about the Amazon project. James, your question?
Hi, Congressman. Yes, my question is about the Amazon headquarters, too. I know they just added 2,000 jobs over in Fort Point, but it scares me to think about the fact that they might be coming here. It seems to me like it could be as big of a nightmare as, I thought the Olympics might be if they were to come here. A lot of overcrowding and could sort of add to the transportation problems and the housing problems we've talked about. What are your feelings on Amazon coming to Boston?
And they're mixed, just like yours, it sounds like. I have mixed emotions. Certainly I'd like 50,000 good jobs. That's good for the economy, obviously, and good for the people who have those jobs and all the people that service those people having those jobs. At the same time, you're 100% right. If that's going to happen, it has to be done in a thoughtful way. Has to be done with transportation needs at the top of the list. Wherever they go, we have to determine how they're going to get to that job and how they're going to get out of that job back home. I don't think that was done very well in the seaport, and we're struggling with that now. So I think that's number one. Number two is we're going to have to figure out what we're doing, what we're going to do with housing. Because you're right, if these are, from what I understand, most of these jobs are good-paying jobs, and if they come into a given neighborhood of 50,000 people with good-paying jobs, you get some gentrification issues. So I'm hoping that this is done in conjunction with statewide. It cannot be handled just in Boston or just in the immediate Boston vicinity. It has to be done at least in eastern Massachusetts, because 50,000 people, they're not all going to live here, nor should they. Some of them might, you know, we might need to build housing along a commuter rail line out in Stoughton or wherever it might be. And that needs to be thought through in order to minimize the potential for gentrification. So I have mixed emotions about it. My hope is that the state and the cities, not just Boston, but the cities involved, I'm hoping that they are really sitting at the table trying to plan this thing out, as opposed to simply say, yay, we got 50,000 jobs, that's great. It is good, but it should be concerning, and I'm praying that we have a more thoughtful approach than we've had in the past on some of these things.
We have time for one more question tonight, and that is from Patrick from Somerville, who would like to talk about volunteerism. Patrick, your question?
Oh, thank you. Congressman, I'm a Somerville resident, specifically Spring Hill, and I want to tap your expertise with respect to the fact that you've come from Somerville, got to the National, and you remember your roots. And I have an opportunity to do volunteer work. I do not know what would be most utile. And so my ask of you is, it's like on both a Somerville scale and a national scale, you know, where would volunteer work, what is needed?
That's a big question, Patrick. I think at some point you're probably best off coming into the office and you can talk to some people about that. The answer is, and tons of things are needed. It really depends on what is your passion. You could help teach in a classroom. They become a teacher's aide. You can help senior citizens on a daily basis, either on a personal level or a transportation level or a delivery level. You can help people who are handicapped. There's a thousand ways to do it, and there's a lot of great volunteer organizations around that would love to have somebody like you reach out and help them. But first, I would suggest you really got to consider what's your passion. Is it food deprivation? Is it housing? Is it mental health? Is it age-related items? I mean, is it little kids? We can get you coaching at a little league. We can do some after-school daycare things. There's a lot of volunteer opportunities in Boston, a lot of great organizations, and we'd be pleased to hook you up with any number of them. But you do have to give us some idea of, you know, what it is you might like to do.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We do apologize that we could not get to everybody's questions this evening. You will have a chance at the end of the call to leave Congressman Capuano a voicemail. And with that, I'd like to turn the meeting over to the Congressman, who will say some farewell remarks. Congressman?
Thanks, Allison. I want to thank everybody who stayed on the call. And I know some people stay on for a few minutes and then leave. But a lot of people stay on the whole time. And for those of you, I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to listen, to participate. I'm hoping that it was enlightening and informative to people. And again, more than anything else, the idea is to try to keep the lines of communication open. When you represent 800,000 people, sometimes that's very difficult to do, which is why we like to do this type of outreach and 1,000 other ways we can do it. But this is one way. And with that, I'm simply going to say thank you all very much for spending a little time with us tonight. And thank you and good night.